Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Ben Witchell from Flint Vineyards up in East Anglia, which is sort of Norfolk, Suffolk area.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, last week I forgot to mention where Norfolk and Suffolk is for our overseas listeners. It's, if you imagine London as a clock face, we're about 2 hours sort of in the 1 o'clock direction.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, roughly. A little knobbly bit that sticks out on the eastern side of England, yeah.
We're here in your vineyards. Last time I met you was about 2 years ago, and you were telling me all about this research that you'd got a UK government grant from.
That's correct, yeah.
Originally, I was thinking it was an EU grant, but it was a UK government.
Yeah, it was UK government. We did get an EU grant to help fund some of the start-up costs for the winery, so we had a rural development grant for that. But we also applied for an R&D grant to do some research and development, and that was funded by the Eastern Agritech Initiative. Mm-hmm. So they're focusing on kind of east of England, but they support agriculturally based research projects. And there's a lot of things looking at sort of beverage and food industries as well, so they were particularly interested in people doing things that are relatively innovative in that kind of area. So I went to them with the idea of doing a project looking at the Bacchus grape variety, because mm-hmm. it's a relatively new variety, certainly in England, that's not really been researched that much. And also with some of the things that we're doing around sort of inert gas handling, that's also quite innovative in this country. So, yeah. What did they pay for?
Yeah.
They paid for some of the analysis, so mm-hmm. some of the actual runs that we were doing, because we actually partnered up with Jeff Taylor and Rachel Rees at Camden BRI, and they're one of the top labs in Europe, and they basically do most, I think, or quite a lot of the analysis of the wines that are imported into England. So all the wines you see in supermarkets, they're doing a lot of that analysis, but they also do the analysis for all of the wines that are released in England that are part of the English PDO scheme. So mm-hmm. to become a classified English wine, you have to have your wine sent to them, and they have to achieve certain levels, like levels of sulfites and protein stability and things like that. So as well as paying for some equipment, I paid for some lab time with them, because the analysis that we were using was a process called gas chromatography, mass spectroscopy, or GCMS, using a trial that was actually developed by Jeff at Camden BRI, and using very expensive equipment that we could not possibly even begin to afford, even with a grant. So we paid for some runtime from them, but we also paid for some small tanks, temperature control facilities, and also went towards the inert gas press that we've got.
Okay, so the idea was to, if I recall, the research was to get some Bacchus.
Yeah.
Ferment them slightly differently,
yeah,
and handle them slightly differently. So you got different styles of Bacchus,
yeah,
and then analyze them to see what differences there were between them.
That's really the sort of second phase of what we're doing. So we haven't quite got that far yet. What we've done as the first part of the trial is actually look at some typical Bacchus wines. So okay. we've taken 10 Bacchus wines that mm-hmm. were made in 2015. We took about 12 or 13 tank samples from different wineries, including our own, of Bacchus. And we also took some comparative wines, so from Germany, and also a Sauvignon Blanc from, I think it was a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. So we were trying to take wines that were close to Bacchus. So we took, obviously, the parent grape varieties like Müller-Thurgau Riesling and Silvana. We took a Sauvignon Blanc, because everybody compares Bacchus to Sauvignon Blanc. We took a Verdejo, and we took a Muscat. And what we did, we took these wines, and working with Jeff, we used GCMS to do a full profile aroma scan of those wines. So it gave us a qualitative idea of the full spectrum of aromas in those wines. So, yeah.
Before we get into what they were, because there's a lot of big old complicated names.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I was listening to the show on the way out that we covered last time, and we did talk about the aromas that they come out.
Yeah.
But it was towards the end of the show, and I wouldn't mind, before you start using all these words that no one actually relates to. Should we go through the most common style types of aroma, and if you name it, and the examples of that that you might particularly get.
Okay. Well, I'm no massive expert in aroma compounds, but with aroma compounds, they tend to be split into two areas. Aroma compounds that are derived directly from the grape, and aroma compounds that are derived mainly through the process of yeast metabolism through the fermentation process.
Mm-hmm.
So the latter, the fermentation process, will produce esters,
mm-hmm.
and they can be the most important ones are the sort of acetate esters. And esters are essentially a combination of acetates and acids and ethanol. So you need the ethanol, really,
alcohol
to get that to happen. So things like ethyl acetate, which form part of the main part of volatile acidity, which is that kind of nail polish smell. So they can be faults. But there are acetate esters which can be fruity, sort of smell of bananas and strawberries and things like that. So the esters tend to be on the fruity spectrum, but mm-hmm. they can also be very volatile as well, especially the fermentation esters. They can actually be quite volatile and not last that long in the bottle.
And that's one of the reasons why you do a cool fermentation with white wines, to hold on to the esters.
Yeah, that's right. Cool fermentations tend towards ester production. That's correct. Yeah. Then you've got compounds that have precursors in the grape, things like the pyrazine, so methoxypyrazine, which is found in Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet Sauvignon.
And what flavours are they?
They are the sort of herbaceous, kind of grassy aromas.
Yep.
Then you have thiols, which are precursors in the grape, and through yeast metabolism, they can then be expressed as slightly different compounds. Well, they're still thiols, but they're changed through the yeast metabolism. And again, they've been most of the research has been done on sort of Sauvignon Blanc in those areas, and there are three main thiols: 3MH, 3MHA, and 4MMP. Which are found to be sort of more sort of tropical fruits. So 3MH is kind of grapefruits, and then they can get sort of passion fruit as well. But then they can also be responsible for some of those kind of slightly sweaty aromas. Mm. And hot fermentations, warmer fermentations, tend to express thiols.
Sometimes I get a wine that smells a little bit cheesy.
Okay.
Would that be thiols or...?
Cheesy. Well, a slight sweaty flavour could potentially be from that. I mean, cheesy could be due to reduction. I mean, it could be due to some sort of lactic problem, or it could be due to some very bad reduction. Although I think it'd be quite an off-putting flavour, because when you have quite serious reduction, and that's the production of sulfur compounds like hydrogen sulfide. If you've ever smelt rotten eggs in a wine, that would be H2S, which is hydrogen sulfide. Reduction can actually, if it gets out of control, hydrogen sulfide can turn into mercaptans and then sort of disulfides, which is when you start getting wines that smell of cheese and other nasty smells.
Cauliflower.
Yeah, all sorts of things, yeah.
All right, so we'll get back to it. We've done esters.
Thiols, pyrazines.
Turpentines.
Terpenes, yeah. So you've got terpenes, which are, again, they're precursors found in the grape. And the terpenic varieties tend to be things like Riesling, Gewürztraminer, Muscat, and Bacchus, which has got heritage in Riesling. Terpenes are found in the skins, and a bit like thiols, really. And so skin contact and warmer fermentations will tend to increase the levels of terpenes.
Well, I've got a question for you on terpenes. This is a bit off the topic.
No.
Australian Rieslings and New Zealand Rieslings often develop the petrolly smell almost immediately, whereas in Germany it takes years for them to evolve.
Okay.
And someone told me it was to do with the fact that the temperature is warmer in Australia and New Zealand than in Germany, where they grow the Rieslings.
Yeah.
You said it was skin-based, so... Is it that they're giving more skin contact, or maybe the warmer temperature creates thicker skin, so therefore more terpenes?
If they've got riper grapes, and they will have higher levels of terpenes, and it could be due to skin contact, which give more terpenes. I mean, the petroleum kind of aroma is more associated with a compound called TDN. I can't remember the full name of the acronym, but TDN is that sort of petrol-like characteristic in Riesling, which is... again, it's classified. Some people classify it as a terpene. Some people classify it as like a carotenoid, and that normally comes from time in bottles. So sort of like light, warmth, and oxygen exposure in a bottle can actually cause that particular characteristic to come out. So I wouldn't have seen that more as associated with riper grapes. But again, I'm not entirely clear about it. It could be that, you know, the high levels of terpenes are giving that kind of characteristic, perhaps from riper grapes. Mm. I mean, because some people do classify TDN as a terpene-based kind of aroma compound, so it could be to do with the ripeness of the grapes.
Okay. So we've done thiols, esters, terpenes, and pyrazines.
Yeah.
Is that the main...
That's the bulk of them. Yeah, then you've got your sort of sulfur compounds, as I said, H2S and things like that.
Yep.
And then, yeah, things like TDN... you've got volatile phenols.
What's volatile phenols?
So volatile phenols, they can come from...
Is that like a polyphenol?
Yeah, they can come from sort of contact with oak, so and yeast interaction. There's a spoilage yeast called Brettanomyces,
yeah.
Which produces volatile phenols, which can have some quite unpleasant characteristics
sometimes.
Sweaty
cellulose.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Sort of, leatheriness sometimes?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. That's sort of, yeah, sort of pooey, kind of sweaty saddle. Sort of, some people describe it as like taking off a band-aid or a plaster.
Yeah.
And that's found, I mean, sometimes that can be quite desirable. So a lot of the wines, red wines from the Rhone, have actually, they contain quite high levels of the volatile phenols that come from Brettanomyces.
Yeah. What about, like, a lot of people talk about red Burgundy, you know, Pinot Noir, as it ages, it develops that sort of...
Yeah.
Barnyard smell. Manure. Well,
yeah, I mean, that could be to do with a number of things, but... it's quite likely that some Burgundian Pinot Noirs, if they haven't been sterile filtered at bottling, will contain levels of Brettanomyces when they're bottled. And if you have Brettanomyces in the bottle when it's bottled, it's likely that during the aging process that Brettanomyces will produce those volatile phenols. So when you get that kind of barnyard characteristic, it will be from Brettanomyces. Brettanomyces is a yeast. Spoilage yeast, it lives, tends to reside in oak. So oak barrels are kind of a risk area for Brettanomyces. Yeah.
All right then, Ben, I think we will wrap it up there.
Okay, fantastic. Cool.